Jay Sekulow. A lot in the news involving Turkey and the Middle East.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Well, obviously, there's been a lot in the news over the last couple of days on the situation with Turkey and Syria and the Kurds. And it's received some, you know, the president has a position that has been advocating regarding withdrawal from this portion of Syria and the impact that that will have then on relationships with Turkey, as well as the situation with the Kurds, has been much in the news. We wrote a book through our center at Oxford years ago called Burning Bridges, Turkey's Return to Islamic Authoritarianism. So there's a lot of discussion in the press about this issue right now, but I think we need to start with an understanding of what this really means. When you're dealing with Turkey, which is a NATO ally, what are you really dealing with? Let me start. We've got both, Senior Counsel Skip Ash and Director of Policy Harry Hutchison here in the studios with me. Skip, you look at Turkey, you think NATO ally, but Turkey is definitely, although still a NATO ally, has gone in a different direction.
It really has. Turkey has been a loyal NATO ally for a long time, but the recent government under President Erdogan is a conservative government, which is seeking to reinstitute many of the Islamic activities that were done away with under the Turkish Revolution after World War I under Atatürk. And Atatürk tried to move Turkey more towards the west. Erdogan is trying to move it back more towards the east and more into the Islamic community. And the more he does that, the more he breaks culturally with the NATO alliance and with the United States. So that's something we have to deal with. And he is not yielding very much. In fact, in order to push against the United States, he's also beginning to cooperate more and more with Iran and with Russia. And that's not in our best interests.
I have an interesting quote in the beginning of our book, and it was actually written by Professor Hutchinson. It says, quoting our colleague David Benjamin, says, Turkey has long aspired to serve as a bridge between civilizations, between East and West, between Europe and Asia, between Islam and Christianity. Then Harry writes, on the other hand, present circumstances intrude on this ambition. Harry?
Absolutely. So Turkey used to be a bridge between the East and the West, between Islam and Christianity, between Islam and Western Europe. Increasingly, however, Turkey has become an Islamic autocracy, and that is one of the reasons why we wrote this particular book. And we have shown in the book, for instance, that Turkey has ramped up its willingness to, A, persecute Christians, and, two, to persecute its own people unless they support Erdogan and his attempt to expand his influence. It's important to note that Erdogan sees himself to some extent as a modern day caliph, as an authoritarian leader of all of the Muslims in the world. Not all Muslims, of course, share this fantasy, but certainly the evidence on the ground suggests that Erdogan is consumed with this fantasy and he is pursuing it, and he increasingly is willing to work, for instance, with terrorists who are enemies both of Israel and the West.
So let me ask this question, because Skip, you're a military guy. Now, we've got the situation where we've been backing the Kurds for a long time, and they have been loyal fighters with the United States. President Trump has indicated that there's going to be a pullout. There's only, I think, 1,000 troops left in there. What do you think the process is there? Are the Kurds a viable military force, and is it a benefit for us to continue working with them? First of all, we got a minute left here for the break, so let me do this. That was a loaded question to ask you to do in 60 seconds. So obviously we've got a lot to discuss here, and we're going to get into this issue. It's in the news. Take a break from the Ukraine, a break from impeachment for a day, and let's talk about this, because this is obviously, it's an issue that's in the news and it's getting a lot of attention. We want you to be educated, informed. Burning Bridges is available at aclj.org. You can get information about it. We'd be happy to get the book to you. And it really goes into this. I mean, it's Turkey's return to Islamic authoritarianism. We wrote it about three or four years ago, but it's as relevant then as it is now. And this was, again, we had a center that did a lot of work for a number of years at Oxford University. Still do some research from time to time. And these books come out as part of those publications. So a lot more to talk about when we come back from the break.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
You've got a very interesting convergence of activity in Turkey. You've got Turkey now looking for, and this is interesting, and this is, I find this to be absolutely fascinating. Turkey is looking to take on Syria, specifically the Kurds in Syria, and the Kurds have been an ally of the United States. Turkey's a NATO ally of the United States. At the same time, Vladimir Putin and the Russians have been, in a very real way, engaging in Turkey as well, trying to be an ally of Turkey. So I asked Skip Ash, our senior counsel and head of our law and military action issues and international law, to get into this, and I only gave him a minute to do it, which wasn't fair. So I want to start with the first question, that is, let's define who the Kurds are and what they've been doing with the United States.
Okay, the Kurds are a separate ethnicity, ethnic group that exists in the Middle East. They exist in four countries, in Iraq, in Turkey, in Syria, and there's a small portion of them in Iran.
Okay.
The ones that we've been closest with are the ones that were in Iraq, because when we went into Iraq, they sided with us against the regime, the Saddam Hussein regime, and we helped protect them because Saddam Hussein had even used chemical weapons against the Kurds up there. So they were very pro-United States. The Kurds in Turkey, the Turks have refused to even recognize their Kurds. They've called them Mountain Turks. They've banned their language. They've banned their schools and so forth. Syria has a similar
situation. They view them as a terrorist threat.
Well, because of how they've been treated, groups of them have formed terrorist organizations. And
so is that a fair labeling of – I mean, maybe it's too – they do it too globally. But is there a terrorist element within some of the Kurdish independence groups?
There is a group that has been labeled terrorist group that does go against the Turkish interests because they believe that they have, you know, one man's terrorist group is another man's freedom fighters, and they view them as freedom fighters. The West has viewed them as terrorist groups because they've gone after Turkish diplomats and Turkish politicians and so forth. But there's also a group in part of the Kurds are in Syria, and they're right along the border with Turkey, and the Turks view them as a threat because if they were to be able to get any type of freedom or some type of autonomy, they would encourage the Kurds in Turkey to seek the same thing. So wherever they can put the Kurds down, they want to. This is a situation that was created at the end of World War I when the Ottoman Empire was broken up. And artificially, the Kurds were supposed to have been given a state. They never got a state, and they've been fighting for a state ever since. But now that they're in four different countries, it makes it very difficult. So it's a really complicated situation. And the Turks really are against them because the biggest threat to Turkey is the large Kurdish population within Turkey itself and on its borders.
So let me ask you this, Harry, from your standpoint. if we look at, so you got this, the president's not talking about withdrawing troops and what that means.
So you get to a certain number of troops, the only thing they can effectively do is defend themselves. So they can't go out and do anything else. And with that small group, and you have the Turks moving in against the Kurds, we'll either be caught in the middle, or if we try to defend the Kurds, then we will be viewed as the enemy by the Turks. We're not in a situation where you can have a peacekeeping situation. We would have to be part of a peacemaking situation. Whenever you get into that situation, you cause yourself to be an enemy of at least one of the sides.
Yeah. So, Harry, I'm looking at this, and it's a complicated issue to say. I mean, an understatement. We've got, you know, 200 pages of complications in the book we wrote that deals with this. How do you see the situation right now? Obviously, the president's making some moves. There's some opposition to those moves. There's some support. There's some opposition. What's your sense of what we're dealing with?
Well, I think the president is making a well-considered decision in light of his reluctance to expand the military force in Syria in the first place. And so I think Skip's point is very well taken, that if we want to take a more aggressive posture in Syria, then this will demand more American troops on the ground. This will then ramp up the risk that more American lives will indeed be lost. And it's important to note that the Middle East, probably since its inception, has always been a morass of conflicting pulls and tugs, in part because the West has promised so much and delivered so little with respect to organizing the Middle East. The Middle East is really a compilation of tribes, and these tribes have been in conflict for generations, hundreds of years. And many of these individuals do not fully understand, nor do they have the background to understand, in my opinion, democracy and free elections and the like. And so many of the individuals, many of the countries in the Middle East have been governed by a series of dictators. And Syria is certainly one of them. Turkey was one of them. Turkey made positive steps to move in the direction of the West, but now Turkey, to some extent, is floundering because Erdogan suffers from illusions of grandeur, and he is, to some extent, destroying his own economy. And I think one of the ways to deflect attention from the cratering Turkish economy is to engage in adventurous military efforts. And so, by way of background, you should note that the Turkish economy shrank again in the second quarter, that there's been a slump in fixed investment, a fall in private consumption amid elevated unemployment. And so we have inflation, we have currency weakness. In addition, Turkey has made a huge economic mistake. They've borrowed huge amounts of funds at relatively high interest rates in Western currencies. So what does that do? It places pressure on the Turkish currency itself, and this helps deflate the economy. So I think Erdogan is looking to buttress his credentials within Turkey by engaging in foreign wars and foreign adventures, in part to deflect attention from what's going on internally.
So, Skip, if you were advising the president, I mean, I know this is complicated, and that's why I wanted to go over this with you today, folks, because there's a lot in the news about this, obviously, as we're discussing this. And we're going to be, by the way, we've got a great program coming up in the second half hour. We'll get to that, too. We're going to have a little more Middle East focus on Israel and some of the situations there. But, Skip, I want to talk about, because the president's made a decision, and it's not that it's not controversial.
That's exactly right. Our primary reason for going into Syria at all was because of ISIS. We have to keep that in mind. It was the ISIS portion of Syria. They had taken over a great portion of the territory of Syria. And so we went in there and virtually wiped them out as a territorial landholder.
How critical were the Kurds to that effort?
The Kurds were our allies in that. They do not want that type of Islam. The Kurds are Sunni but they're more moderate than the ISIS people were. The ISIS people wanted to establish the caliphate. The caliphate is like a religious leadership organization, and they wanted to be the leader of that. It's interesting that Erdogan would like to be the caliph himself also, so we have conflicting ideas there. But we went in primarily to destroy ISIS, and we've accomplished that. The issue then is to how do we keep them down? But the Turks are going in for different reasons.
Well, so let's talk about that. I want to ask that question because Erdogan's saying he's going in. Why is he purportedly going in?
What he's saying is he's characterizing the Kurds who are in Syria as part of the terrorist organization of Kurds that are trying to bring down Turkey. And they are located primarily in the northeast portion of Syria, which abuts Iraq and Turkey, and along the border, the southern border of Turkey. So he plans to go in with sort of a buffer zone, trying to push the Kurds away from the Turkish border. He's going to push them back, actually, into the areas.
Will that take military action to do it?
Well, it will.
Or will they back up?
Well, they may back up, but all the Kurdish settlements are in that portion of Syria. So he's going to be pushing these people out. He's going to be creating refugees and pushing them out. So he's going to be exacerbating the problems within
Syria. You
think what
he's doing is dangerous?
Oh, I think it's very dangerous. I think he views it as stabilizing his regime. But I think what he's doing, he will destabilize the Middle East, which over time is not in his best interest.
Yeah, I'm going to talk, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about the destabilization efforts and what it means for Israel and our other allies. By the way, coming up in the second half hour, we have Professor Ephraim Imbar, who's an expert on this, on the whole region, and it's going also on national security issues for Israel. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. But I think one of the things, the takeaway for this first couple of segments of the broadcast, is that this is a powder keg, Harry, right there on the border with Turkey. I mean, you've got the confluence of Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria literally within a needle point.
I think that's absolutely correct. And I think, in fairness to the critics of the president, they suggest that this is a bit of a gamble. I would argue, on the contrary, that it is not really a gamble given the number of resources that we already have in Syria. So does it make sense to double down and increase the number of U.S. troops, or does it make sense to strategically withdraw now? We can still fight ISIS through additional air attacks, and nothing will prevent the United States, at least in my opinion, from going back to Syria if need be to fight ISIS in the future.
All right, we'll be back with more in a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
All right, Turkey in the news, Syria in the news, Iran, Iraq in the news, Israel in the news. We're going to be addressing all of it coming up in the next half hour. Professor Ephraim Imbar, along with our Director General for our American Center for Law and Justice office in Jerusalem, Ambassador Rami Levy. So we've got a lot of guests coming up in the next half hour, but I want to finish this with our two experts, Skip Ash and Harry Hutchison, and that is, let's talk about the relationship with Turkey and Israel. It was, for a long time, a very solid relationship. Joint military exercises, Skip, that has all changed.
Yes, it was very tight at one time. For instance, very often you would see Israeli warplanes doing air exercises with the Turkish Air Force over Turkish territory or over the Mediterranean Sea, jointly operating. And so it was one of those things where it was a very tight situation under the previous government. This government is a friend of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood is that portion, Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip and is dead set against Israel. And Turkey has become a great supporter of Hamas. So now we have political rivalries, and that has destroyed the military cooperation.
How dangerous is this? So does the incursion into Syria, how does that play in with Israel, or is it not much of a factor?
Well, right now it seems to be the Russians are sort of in between the Turks and the Israelis. The Russians and the Israelis have been talking to make sure that they deconflict.
Explain what deconflict means to people.
When the Russians are going to do a military action or the Israelis are, the Israelis have a way of contacting the Russians and the Russians the Israelis so that they don't inadvertently fly in the same areas, view an aircraft from one another as enemy and shoot one another down by mistake. So when they deconflict, they say, okay, we want you to stay out of this area during this time period because we're going to be taking action. And that has avoided any Russian-Israeli problems. You'll recall a couple of years ago, the Russians flew over a portion of Turkey and Turkey shot down one of their aircraft.
Right.
And so there is a chance, you know, when you're flying, that area is very compact and you can inadvertently overfly a border very very easily. So that's one of the things that at least the Israelis and the Russians have coordinated on. I think it sticks in the craw of the Iranians and the Syrians because the Russians are nominally their allies. But I think it's been very important to make sure that it doesn't spin out of control.
So I look at now from a policy standpoint, the president's, again, there's agreement and disagreement. I know Senator Graham did not like this idea. Others were concerned about this. Harry, how do you view the, kind of going back to where we started here, how do you view the Kurds in this situation? Are they pawns in the middle of all this, or are they, I mean, they obviously, Turkey has one view of some of the Kurdish institutional groups, viewing them as terrorists. We in the United States have historically viewed the Kurds more generally as allies. Is there something in between? What do you think?
Well, I think there is perhaps something in between, and I think it's an opportune time to think about a more nuanced view of the Kurds. I think the Kurds can be very useful to our interest and have proven to be useful to our interest. But the real question, going back to what I said earlier, is that in order for us to fully protect the Kurds, let's say from Turkey, we would still have to put more troops, American troops, on the ground. And so the question, the open question for the American people is, are we prepared to support that effort? Number two, I would make the following point. Many of the critics of the president's decision to withdraw from Syria suggests that this move will indeed embolden Iran. And I think that is a nonsensical view. This president has done more than any recent president, probably over the last 20 to 25 years, in reducing the influence of Iran through the imposition of a massive sanctions campaign that has crippled the Iranian economy, reduced their capacity to fund terrorist groups, Hamas and any other group, for instance, that might indeed threaten Israel. So I think many of the critics are simply offering a spin that is convenient at this particular moment in time that fails to appreciate all of the facts on the ground.
So, Skip, when we look at what Harry just said, and I look at the situation, and I look at what's happening right this moment, I look at the map, and I see Turkey, the border of Turkey goes to Iraq and to Syria and Iran.
Correct.
And then you see, you know, Israel kind of tucked away on the side. But if you look at a map and you look at the borders of Turkey, Turkey borders Syria, Iraq, and Iran. That is a pretty volatile neighborhood.
It really is. And those are exactly the places where the Kurds live, right in that border area.
How did they end up there?
Well, that's traditionally, that's where their homeland was.
Okay.
So they view that as their homeland. That's where they originally came out of Asia, farther, you know, in the steppes of Asia, and that's where they settled. And so that territory has been fought over by the Persians and the Turks and everybody else, and they've been sort of in the middle of that, and they've been wanting a country of their own, and that's considered a threat to all the countries in the region that now have Kurdish populations. Turks don't want to give up any territory for it. The Syrians don't. The Iraqis don't. And the Iranians don't. And yet the Kurds still want to have, you know, the self-determination, have their own state. And we can understand that, but it's probably not going to happen. And the Turks would do everything they can within their power to make sure they do not gain independence, even outside their own territory, because that would be an encouragement of the rest of the Kurds to seek to expand the state to include traditional Turkish areas, or Kurdish areas, I'm sorry, in the surrounding states.
After the break, we're going to be joined by Professor Ephraim Imbar from Israel and also our Director General of the American Center for Law and Justice Office in Jerusalem, Ambassador Rami Levy. And we're going to be talking about national security issues for Israel in light of all of this that's going on. But I want to do a couple of takeaways here. So as the president makes this call and that this withdrawal takes place, what do you anticipate happening, Skip? What do you see happening militarily?
Not exactly sure. Because if the Turks go in and they go in like they're going to wipe out the Kurds, that's going to have a different reaction in that neighborhood than it would be if they're going in to say that we're just protecting our own borders from terrorists. That would be a different thing. But if they go in with the idea they want to wipe these people out so they never have to deal with them again, that's going to be very destabilizing. And given Erdogan's, acted recently, that could very well be his plan.
So, Harry, how do you see this falling out from a policy perspective? There's people split on this, on what the president's doing. Some think we're abandoning the Kurds. Others think that this is just the nature of disengagement. The president doesn't like these foreign entanglements.
Yes. So I think it's a very, very complex issue. But I also have to point out again that it's important to note that we do not wish to keep our troops in the Middle East or elsewhere, if possible, for an extremely long time. And that's number one. Number two, the patience of the American people, if you actually talk to them, is running out for a lot of our foreign engagements. And thirdly, I would point out, to the extent that Turkey attempts to wipe out the Kurds, this may have repercussions for Turkey itself. The economy, the Turkish economy, yep, is not doing well, and wiping out the Kurds will cost them manpower and resources.
All right, that does it for the first half hour. We're going to be joined by Ambassador Rami Levy coming up, Professor Ephraim Imbar. We're giving you an inside look at the situation in the Middle East, Turkey specific, Israel as well. Back with more in just a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
We'll fight for the right to live in freedom.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. First half hour, we've been talking about the situation with Turkey and Syria, certainly in the news. I want to talk now about the greater Middle East, talk about Israel. We'll be joined by Professor Ephraim Inbar. He's the founding director of the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. He's also involved in issues involving national security for Israel, and we've got we have great questions there. Also, our director general for the American Center for Law and Justice office in Jerusalem, Rami Levy, is with us. And again, Professor Inbar is the president of the Jerusalem Institute for Strategy and Security. We've got a great panel here and a lot to discuss. I want to first give you some information to our audience, and that is the Jerusalem Institute for Strategy and Security is a think tank in Jerusalem, especially involved with national security issues. Some of the leading experts in the world on national security on Israel, and with all the discussions out of Iran that even took place at the United Nations today, we thought this would be a timely opportunity to discuss some of these issues. For Professor Inbar, first, give us a little bit of detail about the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies, about the organization.
We are a think tank which comprises of seasoned analysts. To give you just one example, the former national security advisor of Prime Minister Netanyahu, the deputy national security advisor of Netanyahu, some very good analysts in the government, journalists, and academics.
That's great. Rami Levy, of course, is our Director General for the American Center for Law and Justice office in Jerusalem, also former ambassador, has a tremendous amount of experience, both governmentally and private. Rami, when we look at organizations that are making a difference in Israel, the Jerusalem Institute for Strategy and Security right at the top of the list.
It's right on the top of the list. I can tell you that on a regular basis, researchers such as Yaakov Amidror, that was the national security advisor to the prime minister, meet the prime minister. They constantly meet government ministers and officials in order to advise them about the geopolitical situation in the Middle East and the Eastern Mediterranean.
Professor Inbar is an expert on Israeli strategic doctrine, public opinion on national security issues, U.S. Middle East policy, Israeli-Palestinian diplomacy, and Israel-Turkey relations. Also with us is Dr. Andrew Economo, who knows a little bit about the, Israel-Turkey relation.
Yes, I do know a little bit about it. I'm happy to see that there is contacts between Israel and Turkey. I just found out today from Professor Inbar that there are 12 or 13 flights per day from Tel Aviv to Constantinople, as I call it. Some people refer to it as Istanbul. But that shows that there is relationships going on between the Turks and the Israelis, and I'm very happy to see that. I wish the relationships between the Israelis and the Turks and the Christians in Turkey was different, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah, but so far not much progress there. But no. Let's talk, Professor Inbar, let me start with the topic of the day, which is Iran. I think it's important for people to understand, from your perspective, what is the threat level of Iran as it exists now, politically, religiously, and geopolitically, and within the Arab world? What is the significance of the Iranian threat?
The most significant threat is the regime. It is a regime that is religiously motivated. It's radical Islam that has the dreams of rebuilding an old Persian empire in the Middle East. And they are using very sophisticated means to take over the Middle East. We see Iranian presence in Lebanon. They've actually taken over the country via their proxy Hezbollah. We see them working in order to take over Yemen by the Houthi rebellion. They are in Iraq. Iraq is for all purposes basically a Iranian satrapy. We have Iranian militias there. And of course, we see a great Iranian presence in Syria. Assad, this brutal dictator, has been their ally since 1979. And they have big appetite also to try to destroy the Jewish Israel. They are saying almost repeated daily, yes, death to Israel, death to America.
Back with more in just a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So, Rami, we have done, and you were instrumental in this, we did a documentary several years ago called The Export, which was the Iranian threat of exporting the Islamic Revolution. Their desire to export the revolution, an Islamic revolution, has not decreased with age here. I mean, that documentary is about 5 years old, maybe a little bit longer. And the truth of the matter is that they have still kept up, the Iranians still want to export the revolution. Is that your view?
Exactly. Just like Professor Inbar said, Iran is using their proxies, if it's Hezbollah in Lebanon, if it's the Houthis in Yemen, in order to continue slowly take over the Middle East. What has just happened in Saudi Arabia with the bombardment of the oil fields by the Iranians and the Iranian proxies shows what they're looking into. I think one of the most biggest problems in with Iran is the nuclear capabilities and their intention to create an atom bomb.
So let me ask you this, Andy: when we talk about proxy, a proxy for that in Syria is a proxy for Iran, or Lebanon is now becoming almost a satellite country, or Iraq proxies for Iran. Right. What are we talking
Stand-ins.
About?
Basically, that is an alter ego. It's a stand-in for that country. In other words, that country is acting on behalf of the proxy of the person for whom it is a proxy holder. It is, in effect, Syria is Iran. In effect, these countries are Iran, and they're acting on their behalf and for their benefit, but not using the name Iran to do so.
So, Professor Inbar, when I look at the Iranian threat and you look at the, you know, what they've tried to do, what is it that they want to accomplish? We know the threat. They have the they've got military. They've got their political influence within their region. What are they trying to accomplish? What do the Iranians want?
They want basically to conquer the whole Middle East, to rule over it, and to frighten the West with a bomb, with a nuclear bomb, in order not to interfere with their plans. Actually, they have even bigger dreams. They try to build a blue water navy in order to get to the Atlantic Ocean. They try to destabilize the Moroccan regime in order to have a shore on the Atlantic. It is a very dangerous and ambitious regime.
Do you sense that when you draw the distinction, do you draw the distinction between the regime and the people?
Yes, people don't count in this type of countries. It is a regime that calls the shots, and they have the guns, and the people simply don't count. It's not a democracy. It's a dictatorship.
So one of the things, Rami, we saw in 2009, remember the Green Revolution. Unfortunately, the previous administration did not support the people in Iran when that protest was going on. I still get the sense that the Iranians themselves, not talking about the regime leadership or the regime operatives, but the people of Iran do not want to be living under this theocratic dictatorship. What's your sense?
It's true, 100% true. Again, as Professor Inbar said, they have no choice because they're under a constant terror threat from the regime. And all the social media, I would say, tests or pilots to try to have the people go against the regime, I believe, are not going to be successful because the regime is a very tyrant one, and they would use force and guns in order to stop it.
Professor Inbar.
I think we should not underestimate the power of the socialization process that is taking place in Iran. After so many years of this type of pervert education, anti-American, anti-Semitic, it filters down to the people. And those shouts, death to America and death to Israel, I think do reflect some of the public sentiment. And it is a process that is dangerous in the long run.
Andy, we have seen the president today make a very strong statement about Iran and what Iran's attempting to do. And, of course, you had the situation with Saudi Arabia. The president clearly understands the threat. I think the American political and military leadership seems to understand the threat. I think it's harder for the populace in the United States to understand the threat because it seems like it's way over there.
Right. That's why it's important to travel and to go and to see. Once you have been to Israel, as I have been 6 or 7 times, every time with you, by the way, yep, we have seen a country that is truly the only democracy in the Middle East. We have seen a country that is under threat. Someone said, if we put our arms down, it was Israeli, said, if the Iranians and the Saudi and the Arabs, rather, put their arms down, that we will be, we'll have peace. But if we put our arms down, we will be eradicated. Living under the trauma of bombs every day, of mortar shells, living in that kind of an atmosphere certainly has a psychological impact on the populace. And that's what Israel faces every single day. Just as the Christian population, I must say, by analogy, in the old Ottoman Empire of Turkey faces every day the threat of literal extinction, Jay.
Yep.
This is extinction. Israel is being threatened with extinction as a nation state and the Jewish people as a Jewish population by people such as the Iranians. And the only thing that the Iranians understand, and most of these nations in the Middle East understand, is the use of brute force. And we have to say that, and we have to be honest about it, because they don't understand, they don't have the same diplomatic bent that we have in thinking problems through and to working them out in that solution. Now, the president is using that force in an economic way right now, but I don't know how long that's going to continue.
One of the things Professor Inbar's organization has, and this is the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies, are tremendous resources online. Let me give you the address. I don't know if we have it on the screen there, if we could put it up. But if not, I can certainly give it to you. It's jiss.org.il, IL for Israel. But it's, again, jiss.org.il. One of the resources that they have, that I've been given, which is a tremendous resource, it says, Might at a Critical Moment. Give me, Professor Inbar, what's the kind of thesis behind this great publication?
The thesis is simple. Those are the recommendations for the new government of Israel. We had recently one too many elections.
Yep, still not but, resolved.
first of all, advise the government to implement policies that are within the Israeli consensus, because it's very important to keep the people of Israel together, to keep national cohesion, because we still have a lot of challenges ahead of us, and we want to make sure that everybody joins in the war effort in case we are called to have this ultimate test. We are telling the people that Iran is indeed the main threat, and we may remain alone and we have to take care of it. We appreciate, of course, the great friendship of the United States and the support this great country is giving to the Jewish state. We also emphasize the importance of Jerusalem, not only religiously and historically, but also strategically.
Yes. I mean, I've written a book about it. I mean, it's something that it's kind of the book I've always wanted to write, and that was about the importance of Jerusalem, and it also both the legal, biblical, geopolitical. But I want to talk about geopolitics. I want to move off of Iran for a moment and go to an issue that we deal with a lot at the ACLJ as well. Obviously, we deal with the Iranian issue, but we also deal with the issue with Turkey. Rami knows this because he was involved in it. We were successful in negotiating the recognition of the Patriarch of Jerusalem from the Greek Orthodox Church. That was no simple task, I will tell you. We had trilateral governmental negotiations going on. Rami played a very critical role in getting that resolved. Having said that, the situation with Turkey and the Greek Orthodox Church, of course, Constantinople, Istanbul is the head of the church as far as where the Greek Orthodox are located. Yet in Turkey, the persecution of religious minorities, especially Christian minorities, has been unrelenting. I mean, however, you're also concerned that it is a, where people have this maybe misconception, Turkey, though, itself, and Erdogan in particular, is a strong man in the classic sense. How do you view Turkey right now?
Turkey,
because you want us to be cautious. You said that when we in our briefing. We need to be cautious on how we engage Turkey.
Turkey is a very important country in the Middle East because of its strategic location and because of its mere number of people. We are talking about over 80 million people. It is a relatively well advanced country. And it carries a lot of weight in the Middle East. It is probably the only country that can be a counterweight to Iran, apart from Israel in this region. And Erdogan maybe is not going to be forever. Therefore, we should be careful not to estrange the Turks and not to push them, for example, into the Russian hands.
Are the Iranians concerned about Turkey? Do they view Turkey as the stronger? How do they view it? How do the Iranians view Turkey?
The relation between Turkey and Iran is a historic relationship. They have great respect for the power of each other. Yep. And it's a tense relationship. At the same time, they know the limits. And both countries, of course, are concerned about each other. We've just heard, actually, Erdogan alluding to the need of Turkey to arm itself with nuclear weapons, probably because Iran has this ambition. So this is another reason to try to curb Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons, because we may see nuclear proliferation in the Middle East.
Back with more in just a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
Let's talk about Jerusalem for a moment, because it's a big issue. By the way, if you're just joining us, we're with Professor Ephraim Inbar from the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies. I'm putting the website back up on our screen so you could see that. It's easy to get information, jiss.org.il. That's a great way to get information. And Professor, I want to go to, I think, what is another issue here, and that is strategic alliances for, I want to get to Jerusalem in a moment. We'll save that for the very end. But and by the way, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, share it with your friends. We got more that we're discussing here. Let's talk about Jerusalem, because I want to conclude our time together here on this broadcast on the issue of Jerusalem. First of all, and that automatically this includes the situation between the Israelis and the Palestinian Authority. I have been advocating for years that it's very difficult to negotiate with someone that doesn't recognize your right to exist. You take, and their partnerships within the Palestinian Authority with Hamas, and Hamas in its charter calls for the destruction of Israel. So on the, but you're on the ground, the relationship right now between Israelis or the Israeli government and the Palestinian Authority, how do you see it right now? Are we at a, is it been this, it's always been fragile, I'll say. There's been times when it's been better than others. How is it now?
Basically, we understand that the conflict between us and the Palestinians will not end anytime soon. There is so much hatred there. The Palestinian Authority instigates constantly against the Jewish state. What we read in their books in their school is terrible. What we read in their media is terrible. And this is how the Palestinians are being brought up. Therefore, without any change in their education system and their media, will see no chance of having any peaceful relations between us and the Palestinians. They simply hate us. In Jerusalem, I think that the Palestinians living in Jerusalem, it's quite clear. They want the status quo. They want to live under Israelis.
Yes.
They are not stupid. Because if they compare the situation in the Palestinian Authority to the situation in Jerusalem, of course, the situation in Jerusalem is much better, and they are fully integrated into the economy of Jerusalem. Actually, we see more and more Arabs in Jerusalem wanting to join schools with Israeli curriculum, because this will give them a better chance to enter a good university. We see more and more Arabs in East Jerusalem trying to improve their Hebrew, because this is, again, will give them a better chance in getting a better job in the Israeli economy. So the situation on the ground in Jerusalem is pretty good. We have greater police presence. We are investing a lot of money. Actually, this government, the Netanyahu government, yep, has invested a lot of money in Eastern Jerusalem to improve the lives of the Arab residents.
So Rami, from your perspective, because you've been dealing with this issue with us for two decades now. I mean, it's hard to believe it's been that long, but I remember our very first meeting. I think it was at the Willard Hotel in Washington. Right. It was one of them. It was either Willard or one of them. But it was a long time ago. It was probably 2000, maybe 2001.
Three.
2003. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Better at remembering. You're younger than me, so you get a better memory. How do you see it right now for the sake of Jerusalem? I mean, as far as, you know, there's all these calls. You divide Jerusalem, which we've always advocated would be a huge mistake. How do you see things right now politically and intergovernmentally?
Intergovernmentally, you saw the elections results, which is close to a tie. But
yes.
Both Gantz, Benny Gantz, who is contending, and Benjamin Netanyahu,
right,
are not going to divide Jerusalem. That's 100%. So there's a consensus in the state of Israel about that. Regarding the situation with the Palestinians, as Professor Inbar said, you cannot divide Jerusalem today. There's no reason to divide Jerusalem. Again, if the deal of the century is going to come up with some new ideas, initiatives that will allow us to protect ourselves,
yeah,
in the Judea and Samaria and in the Jordan Valley, I think that could be an interesting development.
Andy, you and I have been up to the Golan Heights on many times. We've been up to the Golan Heights when rockets were coming in. We've been down to Gaza when rockets were coming in. But the president, I was able to, that was a great event when the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, was in the Oval Office and the president signed the declaration of recognizing the Golan as sovereign Israeli land. You've been up there. I've been up there. We've been diverted to not go up there and went to a fig and cheese restaurant.
Which was very good.
It was very good, but because we couldn't get up there at that particular time because there were problems up there.
Right.
But strategically, and this is one of the things we're going to show our team when we go over there, the Golan plays an unbelievably important role.
It is very important. We could see, we could look over the Golan Heights literally into Lebanon and see Hezbollah flags. I actually saw them flying.
Yes.
But the thing that I want to emphasize is this. As an Orthodox Christian and as a Christian, we better hope and pray that Jerusalem remains under Israeli sovereignty. Because if the Palestinians or the Arabs move in, all those historic Christian sites are gone. Believe me, they're gone, and you'll never see this, the Tomb of the Holy Sepulchre again.
Professor Inbar, how do you view the significance of the Golan?
The Golan Heights is simply the best defense line Israel has in the north. The Golan Heights gives us limited strategic depth. The Golan Heights is the best place to have intelligence installations to look deep into the east. The Golan Heights gives us control of water. We have desalinization, a lot of desalinization yes. in Israel, but still we need natural water. And this, the Golan Heights controls the largest basin of water, the Lake Kinneret.
Let me ask you this, Rami, on the Golan Heights situation. How significant was it for the Israelis when the president made that recognition for the state of Israel?
It was, one of the nicest days in the history of Israel. Israelis were so happy about it. And actually, I've met Ambassador Friedman so many times yes. and discussed it and thanked him for it.
Yeah.
And thank you for what you've yeah. done, Jay, and ACLJ.
Well, yeah, well, David Friedman's a good friend, and he's the U.S. ambassador to Israel. He's a brilliant lawyer and been a great, great ambassador and a great leader. I take the Golan Heights, and at the same time, you can't ignore the fact that the United States recognized, Professor Inbar, the Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel. How significant was that?
It was great. I was elated. And of course, I know that Jerusalem is our capital, our eternal capital, but still it is very important to hear it from the president of the most powerful nation on earth. And hopefully President Trump will be emulated by many other countries because this is the right thing to do.
Let me ask you this, Andy. You and I have been in Jerusalem multiple occasions. People don't understand, unless you've been there, that you literally can walk two blocks over and you're in one part of Jerusalem and then you're in the East Jerusalem and it's a whole different world.
I think.
And in the old city, it's quarters. I mean, there's the Arab quarter, the Jewish quarter, the Christian quarter. I mean, it's something.
The best way to put it was a Greek Orthodox priest was leading a tour and we went into Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, okay? And we went through all the mess that you have to do to get through there and into that part. And then we came back into Jerusalem proper, West Jerusalem, and he looked at me and he said in Greek, "Tora yirisa mesto politismo." Now we have finally returned to civilization.
Yeah, well, which says a tremendous amount. All right, I want you to be involved in the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies. Great reason. I'm just holding one of the many, many that I'm holding in my hand right now that they have available. The website, we're going to put it up on the screen right now, is this is for the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies. Is jiss.org.il. That's jiss.org.il. And it's a great way to get information and resources from the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies. On behalf of all of us and Professor Inbar, thank you so much for being on our broadcast. Rami, as always, Andy, have a great day, everybody.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.